Well, I'm Jimmy, Power Sober Alcohol. And I'm extremely grateful to be here. And wow, prime rib, it was boiled ham, it was macaroni salad, potato salad, all kinds of desserts. What do we see about making reservations for New Year's Eve? This is the place to be. But it's a place to be for those who are interested in sobriety and a brand new life. And you know, that's what I like to talk about. It wasn't too long ago, well, many years ago, let me put it that way, up in New York State, before I was introduced to this AA program, that I remember one day I had a knock on the door, and I opened the door, and standing before me was this real shabby-looking fellow. Wow, he was a down-and-outer. And I figured, well, he wants a sandwich or a few dollars or something. And, you know, I could tell he had holes in the bottom of his shoes, and he had patches in the knees of his pants. His jacket was all rumpled, his shirt and tie looked crooked, and his hat looked like he sat on it for a week. And so I was wondering what he was going to ask for, and instead he congratulated me. He says, "I want to congratulate you for being home and to be able to receive my wonderful offer." I said, I looked at that shabby guy, says, "Your wonderful offer, what can you offer me?" And he held up a book he was holding in his hand, and on the cover it said, "How to Become an Instant Millionaire." And I said, "Wow." I said, he says, "You read this book and practice the principles in this book, and you can become an instant millionaire." So I look again at this poor down and outer, and I says, "Does this work for everybody?" He says, "Anybody that reads this book and practices the principles in this book can become an instant millionaire." I said, "Well, what happened to you?" He says, "Well, I haven't read it yet." And you know, Tony gave me one of them things you swallow for after dinner, man. And I'm having a tough time swallowing it. And that's what I like to talk upon. You know, I've often said, I can come in these rooms, I can read the big book and understand, say, interpret it, and know what it means. I can read and understand each and every of the steps. This is if I do. I can listen to my sponsor, give me words of wisdom, and all you people in these rooms, when you speak, I listen. I can get a multitude of things that can really enrich my life and strengthen my sobriety. But truthfully, my friends, when I leave this room, if I don't take it out there with me and practice it in my life, I don't own a thing that I heard or read. All it is something that I heard or read. And sooner or later, I'm going to forget it. Sooner or later, I'm going to forget it. And this is what's important. I've been around people that have been around here years or more. And now and then we'll still comment around the holidays. I wish I could drink like normal people could. I wish I could have just a few. Now, let me tell you, number one, this is not a spiritual mind saying things like that. And this is what we call a spiritual program. After I put down the drink a day at a time and come in these rooms, did you know I am still the same alcoholic person that drank? I just don't have a drink in front of me. I still have the same alcoholic mind. And that alcoholic mind will never be comfortable in these rooms because it will not relate to sobriety. I maybe haven't drank in a week or two, but if I retain that alcoholic mind, I will probably drink again or wish I could drink like normal people. Wish I could have one or two. And that is not a sober thought, that is an alcoholic thought. What I must do after I can learn to settle down and understand and listen a little bit, is engender into the spiritual aspects of this AA program, because if I do not, I will always be uncomfortable in the AA rooms, always. And my mind will always be flirting with a drink. And so it's so very important to me that I grow spiritually. Because what does spirituality mean? What it really means is to be born again, to be born again in thought, to leave behind or cast aside the alcoholic mind, the alcoholic thinking, and take on the sober thinking, the spiritual thinking. The problem with most is that it is an intangible. An intangible is like an invisible. I've never seen it, I've never felt it. You take a person who's been in tremendously good physical condition, you know, there's many of us that have and many of us that haven't. You can't explain that feeling, that good, high, strong, powerful, inner confident feeling from being in good physical condition to someone who's never been there. You can maybe make them kind of realize it, but they will never know themselves until they have attained that themselves. And so sobriety being an intangible is foreign to the alcoholic mind. The alcoholic says, well, what's wrong with my thinking? I said the same thing when I come in here. When I came in here, I had just served 9 years on a 40-year prison sentence up in Attica State Prison in New York, where they had that infamous riot. I had 31 years and change on parole. My father died when I was in prison. My mother cried. My wife divorced me and took my baby and moved to California. And I came in here when they talked about return us to sanity. Who, me? That's the alcoholic mind. Return us to sanity. 40 years, and my wife come up to see me right after the sentence and for a divorce. The alcoholic mind, here's what I said. What's the matter, Sal? Can't you wait? I ain't got 40. You know, that's the alcoholic mind, but we can't see it at that time. And we think we're thinking right. How can she desert me when I need her most? I had a rap sheet a mile long. Indicted with organized crime, sentenced to 40 years. And she's left me. I was never with her. In jail, on bail, on the run, on the lam, throughout our whole marriage. Finally she says, that's it. And I couldn't understand why. And that's the alcoholic mind when it comes to sobriety. It doesn't understand. And so some people say, well, go to meetings a day at a time, or don't drink and go to meetings, don't drink a day at a time and go to meetings. I mean, that's great. But as I said here last week, no, that's great, but that's not going to do it. We have to go to meetings, and we have to listen, we have to accept what we hear, and we have to practice it in our lives. Otherwise, we're just here as like going to the zoo, and you get home and you don't remember well that you saw, you know. I remember this big one there, and I remember, you know. Did you hear that speaker? Yeah. What'd he say? I don't know. Yeah. He said some good things, but, well, what were they? I don't know. I mean, what'd you do there all night? We're trying to reclaim our lives and rebuild them and create a new and better person within us. We're trying to attain as they did in the promises. Did you read them promises? Did you know if you read these promises, and there's so many more in the big book, they just list a few here. If you read these promises, and I'm a high school dropout, it's my buddy. I take him everywhere I go. He takes me. If you read these promises and then total them all up, you know what they sum up to? Peace of mind. Peace of mind. Did you know the greatest thing in life is to have peace of mind? Did you know that? It's greater than all the money in the world. Money's nice, don't get me wrong. I ain't gonna rap it. But I found out through the court system is how you get it that counts.
Yeah.
But you know, peace of mind, and this is what it does. It leads us to peace of mind. And then I've heard people, see, if you don't understand your program, you will not get it. If you don't understand your program, you will not get it. You'll toy with it, flounder with it, but if you don't understand it, you can't receive that which you don't understand. So he says, well, I'm waiting for these promises to happen. I haven't drank in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. That sucker over there is getting all these things and I ain't getting nothing. Well, I'm going to tell you something. One of the things to understand, and take this home to bed with you, because these promises will not come to you. They will not come to you. You must grow spiritually into them. You must grow into them. You know, everything we need in life, everything and lead we need in life, my God has already sent down. The answer to every problem, the solution to every situation is already in the universe. I just have to learn how to tap into it. It's not going to come to me. I have to learn to tap into it. And I can only tap into it by growing spiritually because it's on a spiritual plateau. It's not on that human, carnal plateau. Those Lashivas thinkers, as they call them. High school dropout, but I did a little reading. And I'll tell you something, I learned a lot. I remember when I was in high school, this is the way I was thinking. I told this guy, I says, well, I've been 3 years in high school. I said, I'm going to quit. He said, Jimmy, what are you, wacky? And I said, what do you mean I'm wacky? And he says, well, you're 3 years in high school. You got one more year, you'll graduate. And I says, no, I've been 3 years in high school and I'm still a freshman. He said, well, why the hell don't you quit? Which I did. And set out to seek my fortune, which I never found. I had no goal, no aim, no purpose. Wake up day to day, see what the day is going to give me. Do you remember the days? Are you still having the days when you wake up in the morning and if someone said to you, so-and-so, are you going to have a good day today? You would have to say, honestly, you would have to say, I don't know, I got to see what's going to happen. You know, if good things happen, I'll have a good day, right? If poor things happen, I'll have a poor day. That's the human alcoholic mind. The spiritual mind knows when it wakes up that it's going to be a good day all day. Dean Martin said, I feel sorry for you people who don't drink. When you wake up in the morning, that's as good as you're going to feel all day long. And do you want to know why? There's many people who've been around this program for many, many years. When they wake up in the morning, they feel that's as good as they're going to feel all day long. Because they haven't got it yet. They haven't got the spirituality. And there's somebody in this room right now saying, oh man, I got to listen to this spiritual goof tonight, you know. I got to listen to this wisdom from God or whoever the higher power and all. Well, I'll tell you something. You know, I know that every day when I wake up, I am going to be a victor over the day and no longer a victim of it. Are you still a victim of your days? Ask yourself these questions. A guy said to me once, Jimmy, I can't see you having a good day every day, you know, 7 days a week. And I said, well, you're telling me, my friend, is you don't believe you can have a good day every day, 7 days a week. Because if you believe you could, you know that I do. But you know what the difference is? He's got a God of only 3 or 4 good days a week. I got a God of 7 good days. Exciting, dynamic. Even romantic, without a woman. They're romantic. It's incredible. You feel power-packed. You feel exciting inside. Do you know how good I feel right now standing before you? The guy said to me he was kidding around because, you know, I couldn't understand what the word meant. He said, Jimmy, you nervous before you speak? Nervous. When I'm asked to speak somewhere, you know what that is to me? That's my God giving me an assignment. God has given me this assignment. Every time your phone rings, whether it's 1, 2, 3 in the morning, and it's a suffering alcoholic, if they're not drinking and slobbering and making nonsense, they're looking for help. Don't say, do you know what time it is? Was your God ever off duty? Did he ever say to you, do you know what time it is? Let me tell you something. That's God giving you a sign. What greater gift can you ask for than have God give you an assignment like that? To speak before a group of people. Well-fed people tonight, and that's great. I'll tell you something. See, this program is remarkable in so many ways, and that's the way I look at it. But to some, you know, I admit when I first come in here, I used to work my program. I used to work it. And now I practice it. You see, the more you practice something, the more it becomes a pleasure. And the more it becomes a pleasure, the more it becomes you. You see, the more I repeat different things that I say over and over and over that are meaningful and that are going to enrich my sobriety, the more I say them, the more it becomes believable to me. The more it becomes believable to me, the more it becomes part of me. It becomes concrete, embedded within me. It becomes the natural me. So when there's a problem out there, a situation out there, I don't go like, I better not drink. The thought of a drink isn't on that spiritual plane. The thought of actively taking a drink isn't on that spiritual plane. You don't even think of it. It's not there. But if I start missing meetings, it's missing talking to you people and reading the big book and listening to my sponsor, my mind goes back down to where it once was, to where I prayed and prayed and prayed for my God to get me away from. I'll be right back in it. I'll be cursing and swearing and arguing with everybody. Because that's the alcoholic mind. So I'm up on a plateau now. This plateau, you know what this plateau does? It lifts me above anger, resentment, pity, and guilt. It's not on this plateau. It's not up here. I can't do nothing about it. It's not there. But I can go back down to where it is, but I ain't going down there. And never once, for I wouldn't be here tonight after 29 years of not taking a drink, speaking before this group and talking about how to change, if I didn't really care about everyone in this room. Someone might say, well, Jimmy, sometimes you sound like you might have forgot where you come from. How can I ever forget? But if I talk about the solution, isn't that what we want to hear? Isn't that what we want to get away from? The problem. See, the problem is I know many people go back out and they get a traumatic situation in their life. And all of a sudden, this traumatic situation becomes more bigger and more powerful than their AA program, than their God. And they shake and they shudder. And they start calling people. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But they have no inner strength. They have no inner resistance. They have nothing. Because they have this tremendous problem. I go out there. I dare the day. I dare it. I dare it in a sense like this, you know. I come to this AA program right tonight. Listen to you people, I'm going to hear one good thing I can add to what I've already got. You know what that means? Every time I add something inside, I become more inner beauty. You know what this inner beauty is? It's spiritual strength. Spirituality is inner beauty. And I'll be damned if I will go out there and let some sucker with his ignorance take away my inner beauty. Now you might, but I won't. Did you hear what that son of a bitch said? Like claiming to be 3, 4, 7, 8 years sober. I wanted to hit him with Jimmy's cane. That dirty son of a... I'll get even with that. That's not sobriety. What are words of a man's mouth? Besides, if it's true and it ain't good, you better do something about it. Straighten it out. But I'll tell you something. This life is so enjoyable. It's so incredible. I wake up in the morning. Did you know in the last 8 or 9 months from the Veterans Hospital and Emory Hospital, I got a death sentence from I won't mention his name. He's head of surgery. You know, they did operating on me for cancer and whatever, and they cut me 3 or 4 times. I had operations. And they sent me to Emory for what they call ablations. It's on my liver, and they can't reach it. And but anyway, the doctor in general surgery said, Jimmy, here's my number, but there's no sense in scheduling it. There's nothing more we can do for you, you know? You know, it's like a question of time, that's all. This is 8 or 9 months ago. And then the same doctor, head of oncology and hematology at Emory, and you know Emory is so prestigious, and he likes me like a son, and I will see him every month. He wants to see me personally, and he told me basically the same thing. All we can do is watch your blood count, this and that, and see if it's how and everything. And so that's it. I got 2 death sentences in 2 months. Did you know I never once, this is, I'm talking about this much water in the quantity of the Pacific Ocean. I never once did I get that much fear, panic, or upset. You know, I know what the doctor said, and I know they're top men in their practice, but I also know that I have a higher power, I have a God. And for the first time I heard it, the very first time I prayed to God for a healing, I said, God, heal me of this, what the doctors say I have, and whatever. That's what I said. After that, do you know I have never once prayed for God to heal me? You know why? Because my God says, when you pray, listen to this now. Find out why you're never getting answers to your prayers and how you're going to do it from this point on. If you listen and practice it out there, if you do. When you pray, believe that you receive. Believe that you receive. Don't hope. Believe it. Believe it with emotion, with passion. And you will have that which you pray for. Well, it is more simple than that. Believe that you receive. So, I prayed once for a healing, and ever since then, I don't know how many months and days or whatever, each day I thank God for healing me. I've accepted my healing. I've accepted it. Now I go up there to the hospital, they say, wow, you know, things ain't looking right. Well, what do you mean? Well, I mean, your vital signs are getting better. This is improving, and that's improving, and whatever. And the last time I was there, I told the doctor, I said, you know, Doc, this summer I might be a lifeguard. I'm deciding what I'm going to do this summer. Believe that you're healed. Believe it. Don't hope it. Look at these here. I have to pull them out, the promises. What does that mean? They're not the wishes. They're not the hopes. I hope, I wish. We got to get some strength inside of us. Spirituality is so much stronger than evil, so much more powerful than evil. But so many go out there, that's my suit of armor, that's my coat of armor, my spiritual wisdom and knowledge. When anything approaches me, it's not to my liking or that's to evil. I call on my spiritual knowledge. I call on my big book. I call on it. And it's so much more powerful than that enemy. But so many just surrender. Oh, you don't know what happened to me today. Yeah, I almost got fined. Yeah. I mean, so I drank. I don't care what problem I got in life. Somebody says, you shouldn't make fun, Jimmy, of people that go back. I'm making fun of them. I'm waking them up. Damn it all. Listen, you like going back out? I know a guy, he kept going out because when he come in, he was treated like a hero. Oh, you made it back. You're so courageous, you know. Well, up in New York, you get a kick in the butt and say, now you start listening, buddy, because we don't like going to funerals. It's a life and death program. It's so simple, the solution. The solutions are so simple. I remember I used to tell my God how big my problems were. Now I got some spiritual content. You know what I do? I tell my problems how big my God is. What a difference. And somebody says, well, Jimmy, I want to learn to do God's will. What's God's will for me, you know? Should I take this job or that job? Come on. If they're both morally right and legally right, whichever one you feel best for, go after that job. God isn't directing you every job you take, every left turn or right turn. God isn't doing that. But if you want to get closer to your God, if you want to change your life, once again, beginning immediately, right now, immediately, quit whining to Him. You know, to sort of paraphrase one of our greatest statesmen who said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. As of right now, don't forget yourself. God knows we have necessities, needs, and He wants us to ask Him for them. But ask not what your God can do for you all the time, but ask what you can do for God. Like I'm doing here tonight. I don't care if it sounds like I'm blowing my own horn, but I'm up here because God asked me to come. The meal helped a little, but we got some great cooks in this program. I remember once when I was young, I was in a bar, and this guy, you know, he had a shot, and you know how they shake and shake and shake. And thank you for the water. And the bartender came over and he poured it into a drinking glass, and then it shook, but he could get it down without spilling it off. And here I am saying, if I ever get that bad, I'm going to quit. How many times have you said that? You know, here it is, 8:30 in the morning, I'm in the saloon already, having a drink, the sun's shining, and while we'll give it hell tomorrow, you know, give us another drink here. And if I ever get that bad, I'm going to quit, you know. But when you get that bad, you can't quit. You can't quit. Not without a program and people like you. You can't do it. Think you can, but you can't. So we have to all get together. And this program, one of the main things, aspects of this program, proves to me is the love of one drunk for another and the understanding. I don't care who comes in that door now, very first time, shaking and shuddering. They can be down and out and stuffed in the weeds for the last 3 or 4 days. Or they could have a three-piece suit on and still running a business. But every one of us knows how they feel inside. You see, that's why it works. That's how it works. We know how that person feels inside. Because I remember I was confused once. I saw a guy come in. I wasn't around the program hardly at all. I wasn't really a know-it-all. I kind of thought I was. And he's sitting there telling me how down and out he was, how things were going so bad. And I looked at his wrist and he had a nice expensive looking watch, and I said, how bad can he be doing? He ain't been to the hot shack yet. You know, that's the way I assess people. You know, everything has to go. But you know what? You can lose everything. And you've heard it, and maybe it's happened to you. You can lose the job or the position. You can lose the home next. You know, the wife and kids, or the husband and wife, whichever the case may be, get very disgusted with you and leave. And you're all alone, and now you're sleeping under the bridge. To an alcoholic, he'll just keep drinking. Why? He'll keep drinking until finally he gets disgusted with himself, when he can't stand himself anymore or herself. That's why when people come in these rooms, sometimes they're sent by the court and this or that, and there's nothing wrong with that. I know many who came and didn't believe they were alcoholics, and they stayed for many years and they're doing fine, so I'm not against it, but still, you almost have to lose yourself to want a new person. You want a new you. Do you want a new you? Are you satisfied with the you that you're sitting in here with tonight? Maybe you are. I want all I can get out of this AA program. I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. In fact, I have developed a lust and a passion to continue in this AA, to learn and be able to pass on. What a great gift. be able to pass on to others the spiritual truths of this AA program, to be able to help someone else straighten out their lives like when we were so desperate ourselves. Isn't that great? Isn't that a wonderful gift to be able to do that? And say, do you know what time it is? We have to change our attitude. But just growing spiritually automatically changes your attitude. It automatically does. And there's so many that continue to discipline against the problem. My God says, resist not evil. Now, wow, that sounds like a sure loser. Resist not evil. Sounds like, what do you do? Let evil run all over you? Trample all over the top of you? Resist habit you're trying to break. And so every day, let's say it's, I don't want to pick on cigarettes. Let's just, I'm not going to smoke a cigarette today. I'm not going to smoke. I know a guy carried a pack in his pocket, whoever he did, because he wasn't going to smoke. And this way, he had comfort knowing he had one with him. You figure that one out. But anyway, but I'm not going to smoke today. And then they go into a room. Oh, did you see that guy smoking? Did you see that ad for Camels or Lucky Strike anymore? I'll tell you how old I am. But they don't have, you know, always complaining about the ads and being confronted with it. You see, that's not resist not evil. Resist not evil means something like this. I don't want anyone in this room to think about the 37 Chevy. I don't want anybody in this room to think about the 37 Chevy with the broken windshield. I don't want anybody in this room to think about the 37 Chevy with the flat tires. I don't want anybody in this room to think about the 37 Chevy with the bad paint job. What are you thinking about? But I got a better idea. Let's think about Dan's new yacht. We're not going to ask you how you got it, Dan. But I want you to think about his new, it's a little small yacht, you know, and you can, it's a pretty gray with a nice yellow stripe around it. And I want you to think about the back where you can either fish off the back of this little yacht, or maybe you can swim off. But I want you to think about the captain's chair, where Dan sits up in the captain's chair and acts like a big shot. And I want you to think about going downstairs into the hold, is that what you call it? And anyway, there's some bunks you can sleep on. And there's also a microwave you can cook on. I want you to think about that. Now, who's thinking about the 37 Chevy? See? We don't resist in our minds, because as we resist it mentally, it becomes larger and larger. We're feeding it the nourishment it needs, the nourishment of thought. So we starve it to death through lack of thought. I don't think about alcohol. Since the days the doctors gave me that message, I don't think about, I don't even like to say it, as using it as an example that I got cancer. I don't think about it. If I feel something funny down there, it ain't cancer, it's something else. I don't think about it. I don't give it any life in my mind. It has to die. And it's dying, I know it's dying. And when it's dead, I'm going to throw a meal like this. We'll all enjoy ourselves. And my friend Deborah, Tony and Amy, they brought me over here tonight. But my friend Deborah, she's my guardian angel, and she drives me to the hospital out and back. And Deborah was with me when the two doctors told me that, and we got out in the car. And I says, you know, Deborah, I don't like what the doctor said, but I welcome the challenge. I welcome the challenge. And we never talk about cancer, because there's no such thing in this mind. We never talk about taking a drink. There's no such thing in this mind, as long as I stay on that spiritual plane. So this is what we have to do, my friends. If we don't want to drink again, and we want to grow spiritually, we have to put the two together. If without spiritual growth, without a spiritual content, without spiritual inner thought and inner being, we're lost. Because we're just the same person without a drink. And sooner or later, like I say, if you don't drink again, you're going to want to. You're going to want to drink like the normal people do. What alcoholic wants to drink like normal people? I never did. Gee, to me, that was the giddiest thing going. I remember there was a Saturday night, we were in this joint, this establishment, and about 11 o'clock. This guy palled around with us, but he wasn't much of a night like that. I said, hey, where's so-and-so tonight? About 11 o'clock, sir, the guy says, well, he's home sleeping. He's sleeping? Saturday night at 11 o'clock. You see, the alcoholic can't understand this. And the alcoholic, please, friends, this is powerful. The alcoholic cannot understand sobriety. When we first come in here, we don't understand it. Now, I didn't really resist it, but I didn't like a lot of what I was hearing. And I never went back out. And I thank my God for that. But you know, I'll tell you something. It's mainly because I was truly sick and tired of being sick and tired, and some are, they say they are, but they really are. And they hear stories when they come back in, well, I wasn't sure I was alcoholic, or I thought I could have one or two. And so there's no desire there to stay sober for that type of person. Without desire, you know, all the greatest things in life are acquired through desire. Did you know that? Desire. Thomas Edison made over 1,400 experiments before he came up with that filament that would stay lit for the light bulb. And after about 400, he was asked by a colleague of some sort, geez, you must be getting pretty disgusted. 400 times and it isn't working. And he says, well, that's it. He says, all I did was find 400 ways that it won't work. Yeah. But you know what? When a person wants to get sober and feel much better and feel powerful and dynamic and power-packed on the inside, all you got to need is the solution. All you got to do is stick with the solution. Don't discipline against that stupid drink. You know, it's out there waiting for you. I used to hear that. What's out there waiting for me? Well, the booze is, hey, look, I don't care manufactures it, who bottles it, who sells it, who drinks it. I don't want to see anybody, you know, get drunk, especially if they're drinking. But it don't bother me. It has nothing to do with my life. I don't drink at a day at a time. I just don't. So why should I be every day fighting the drink? Next thing you know, my thoughts are just driving me away. I have to have clean, pure, sober, spiritual thinking in order to have a good, clean, sober, spiritual life. And it's the greatest feeling in the world. The greatest feeling in the world. Well, Jimmy, I've got a short fuse, and this guy's got a hot... Nobody has a short fuse. Nobody has a hot temper. Well, they do, but they do because they want to. Now, once again, don't forget where you're coming from, Jimmy. I'll tell you something. This was me. I mean, I wasn't really a hothead or nothing, but I went through all this. I came in this AA program a time bomb of negative emotions. Anger, resentment, pity, guilt, all these things bottled into one. I was ready to explode. I didn't have any of that anymore. And when someone says they have a short fuse or they have a quick temper, I say it's because you want to have. Because I found out it's because you want to have. Any attitude that you put on is one that you want to have, or you wouldn't put it on. You may not realize that, see. That's what I didn't, and many don't. I didn't realize that I wanted to get revenge to somebody. I didn't want to realize that I was supposed to feel guilty over something. I didn't realize that a resentment... So I had that. I did that. And justified it by, you don't know what he said, you don't know what he did, I'll get that sucker. You know, that's the way, but see, we have to understand. So listen to this, here's what I discovered. And I get warm when I get up. And
Oh, by the way, you know, I went away in the last time, the big one. I was 33 years old. I got out when I was 42, out of prison. And, oh, thanks for Caroline.
This is me.
Oh. I'm looking for a sponsor. They always do that. Yeah, I wasn't. Oh, so I spent like 9 years on a 40-year bid because I changed my thinking in prison, and they modified the old law after the Attica riots. Instead of doing 13 years and 9 months to see the parole board, I saw them in 8 years and 4 months, and they told me to go home, and then it takes 5-6 more months before you get approved and all to go home. So I did about 90. And I've been to learn a lot of things in prison. And one thing is about attitude. And you want to know something? I learned this. And someone says, well, you know, it's hard to believe that you can go a week or 2 weeks, Jimmy, without getting angry. Well, it is if you don't know the solution. It's hard to think you can go a month without getting some kind of a resentment. Well, it is hard to really understand that if you don't know the solution. And the solution, my friends, you know, they write books, many books on how to overcome anger, how to overcome resentment, how to overcome self-pity. And these books are sometimes that thick, with diagrams and whatever. And number one, the fallacy right from the beginning is how to overcome anger. Just say that's the topic we're going to use, how to overcome anger. For me, to buy that book first makes me believe there is such a thing as anger. Then I have to believe that I got it. And then I got to realize how to overcome it. Did you know they have these classes? Whether they pay money or big corporations pay hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, anger management, stress management, and they tell you when you go in the room, I read some on stress management, well, for the next 32 seconds, for everyone, put their head out the window and scream as loud as they can, you know, let it all out. Now, the stress is coming from a job, their job situation. See, now they're on their lunch hour and they're going to the management club. Then the next thing you do is, we got a big pillow over there and some boxing gloves. Punch the hell out of that pillow. Get it out of your system. See? Listen, and they got a couple other things like that. Kicking each other in the shins or something. When the anger management class is over, or stress management, you go back to the same job you're blaming it on. You're doing the same thing you're blaming it on. So now you go home and you put your head out the window and you start screaming and your wife's ready to call the nut house. This is stress management. A friend of mine was a construction genius, you know, and he had terrible alcoholic. He gets sober for quite a few years and then he gets some good jobs and be a general contractor on putting up these Wendy's and these different fast food restaurants, and he'd run the whole show, just unbelievable. So for a while, I didn't see him around for quite a while. And see, he would have to go to lunch with these other executives and whatever, and of course they all drank and this and that. And so I said, hey Gus, I haven't seen you around for a while, this and that. And he says, well, I won't be coming around the meetings, Jimmy. And I says, why not? And he says, well, I joined AIM. I says, you joined AIM? What's AIM? Alcohol in moderation. Here's an alcoholic who's going to drink alcohol in moderation. 3 months later, he called me from the county jail. I said, why don't you call AIM? Unbelievable. And so that's what we get in this program, you know. And
like with stress management and anger management. What we're doing, we're trying to manage something that shouldn't exist at all. Now that's hard for a lot of people to accept right now. What do you mean, anger don't exist in your mind, or stress and whatever? No, it shouldn't. It's not of God. It's negative. My God says He created the world and all was good. Do you believe it? See, I believe what I read. I believe what I read in the big book. And I swear by it and I practice it. And my life is so easy. You see, so listen to this, my friend. Every emotion I have in my belly, every emotion I have is a direct result of a thought. Did you know that? Let me explain. I cannot feel angry unless first I think angry. Now you try that. It ain't gonna work. I must think angry to feel angry. I cannot feel resentful unless first I think resentful. Think about that. There's no way I can feel resentful if I'm not thinking resentful. I can't feel guilty unless first I think guilty. There's no possible way. I must think guilty to feel guilty. Listen to this one. There's no way I can feel cheerful unless first I think cheerful. No other way. And I have the choice of thought in my mind. Now, many times they have these, what they call race thoughts. They jump in there and you don't know where they come from. But in your sobriety, children, in your spiritual growth, you will soon realize to instantly recognize a negative thought as soon as it comes in your mind. And then how long you hang on to it is up to you. Or if it's a negative thought, how long you hang on to it is your own fault. Really? I was at a retreat up in, where were we? Where's Jimmy? Jesus. Your father. But anyway, Jim was up there, and he was telling at a meeting, he was telling about something I said. And he says, years ago, Jimmy told me, you know, that if I feel all tore up and worried and sick and sad and nervous and everything, it's because it's of my thinking. And he was complaining about his thinking at the time because he wasn't feeling good. He's feeling very uneasy. And Jimmy said to me, well, I said to him, I said, well, then you know now that you've sentenced yourself to that uneasy feeling. And he says, yeah, I know it now. And I said, well, how long's your sentence? How long's your sentence? It's up to you. You see, I may not recognize it immediately in my mind, but as soon as I recognize it, I have this philosophy that says I will not hold it beyond its breeding point. I will not let it breed. You know, when they breed and they get other little anger things, then resentment things, they all come from the same seed, the seed of negative thinking. You know, so them books they write, 400 pages on how to overcome this and that. You see, any negative thought, you don't have to write separate articles on how to overcome each one. They're all listed under one category, and the one category is simply wrong reaction. That's all it is, wrong reaction. Listen to this, because spirituality is so simple because it's of God. It's so easy to understand because it's of God. God doesn't make anything complicated. You don't have to be a high school graduate to understand God. He makes it so simple and easy. Look what he's enlightening all us alcoholics. Our minds. If he can touch our minds so we can go out and pass it on to others. So God's solution is simply this. Anger, resentment, pity, guilt, all of that, wrong reaction. The simple solution, my friends, is right reaction. Two words solves it all. Right reaction. As soon as you recognize it, change your thinking to spiritual thinking. That's what he means by turn the other cheek. Doesn't mean if Mike Tyson hits you on this side, just turn your head and let him hit you on this side. But that's what I mean by learning to understand. We must understand what we're reading and understanding. If we understand, that's the spiritual response. Come back with a spiritual response. Right reaction. Right reaction. Since I've been practicing it, my friends, I have found right reaction to be the supreme art of living. Wow! So if I'm walking around now on this spiritual plateau, on this spiritual plane, and I know that anything traumatic, if I get any death sentence, they'd sentence me to death, but they didn't give me a date. Geez, even the guys in death row, they know when. But I'm not appealing, I'm just going to God, because I don't believe it. I love the doctors, I love what they're doing for me, but I do not accept the fact that I have cancer. You say you have, love you, because you're going to pass away with it. Forget about it. Really, forget about it. And from upstate New York, I come down here to get warm. What the hell's going on? Guy told me, you know, Jimmy, the Yankees. This guy was a Confederate. The Yankees, he says, when they come south, as soon as they cross the, not the 38th parallel, the Mason-Dixon line. They cross the Mason-Dixon line, they run in the first convenience store asking, what part of Florida am I in? Well, I was never that naive, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm so eternally grateful tonight to be able to stand here and speak before you people on the anniversary of this great group right here in the heart of Miami, Florida. So I did my prison time. You know, they call it hard time. Hard time is sitting in the... Look, I had a wife that left me. I had a daughter I loved so much. I had a dad that died. And I look at their pictures, and other guys would come down, especially around Christmas time, with tears in their eyes. And, Jimmy, how can you look at your family like that and not bust up and this and that? And I'd say, well, we got a difference. You know, you look at yours, and you get a good feeling, and then you keep looking and looking and looking and longing and yearning and whatever. I look at mine, I look at my daughter's picture, I'm watching her grow. I watched her grow from 2 years old to 11 or 12 years old in pictures. And I used her as an incentive to change my life and get out. I mean, this is the difference. It's our attitude toward things. There ain't nothing out there bigger or stronger or more powerful than what's inside me. With you people in this program, is there something out there bigger than you? Bigger than what you're carrying inside? There is, you better change it in a hurry. You'll be back in them damn saloons. The guy told me AA didn't work for him. Jeez, what do you say to a guy like that? Now, this guy I was working with, he wanted me to sponsor him, but he'd be in 3-4 months, he'd get drunk. I read in the paper, you know, he got a... Well, up north they call it a DUI, a DWI, driving while intoxicated. And they took his car away, you know, stuff. Jeez, he had a wife. Why do they want to go back out there? It's not a spiritual thought. Anytime I can endorse the negative thought in my mind, I can endorse the absence of God in my mind. And I don't do that, now or ever again. So he's standing on the street corner, and he's waiting for a bus. See what he sentenced himself to now? Waiting for the bus. And of course, I could smell alcohol on him. He had been drinking a little. And he brought it up. I didn't. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said nothing. He said, well, I suppose you're going to lecture me because I'm drinking. And I said, Bill, it's your life. I said, I have to take care of myself. I said, I don't even know if you're alcoholic or not. But he said, well, I'm drunk and I may want to come back to the pool. I said, well, let me ask you a question then. I said, why do you drink? He had about 12 years of sobriety then. I said, why do you drink? And he looked at me and he came with, you know, with that look that he had me back against the wall. He had the answer that I couldn't overcome. I said, why do you drink? And he said, because I'm alcoholic. I said, you know, that's funny. I said, I'm alcoholic too, and I don't drink. I don't drink. What's the difference? He never reached a spiritual level in his sobriety. All he did was come to meetings and toy with the thought of drinking or not drinking or wishing he could, knowing he shouldn't. What a way to live. A double-minded person is never content, never will be. How much time did you give me? Pardon? What'd you say, right now? What'd you say? Oh, just a few more minutes. She's been trying to throw me out since I came in. Holy miracle, what a joint this is. Why do you eat too much? Yeah, I was born and raised in the 40s, and I never changed. Well, it's catching. He's starting to get it. But it's beautiful, ain't it? Isn't it beautiful? But so, anyway, so that's why. Bill keeps drinking because he doesn't believe in spirituality and the spiritual gifts and the spiritual empowerment. He doesn't believe in it. And so he'll always be fussing and feuding with himself and his wife and the bartenders and whatever. And that's his business. But it's not mine. But anyway, I'm glad I was asked to come here this evening, my friends, and I just think it's so enormous. It's such a great feeling to be able to stand before a group and know that it's because God sent you, and to know that maybe I said something that might help somebody in their sobriety. I think maybe I did. And some people say, well, you know, I didn't hear you. Well, I guess I didn't. I should have, you know, kind of qualified myself. I drink to excess, and that's a whole story in itself, as we all have our own stories. And I was led to this program, thank God, and I'll never want to return to the way that I once was. And you've all heard it before, and you'll hear it once more tonight. I may not be the man that I want to be. I may not be the man that I should be. But thank God and all you people, I'm not the man that I used to be. Thank you.